All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW-2 type helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969, just to give you a little credibility, I hope. We want to welcome to today's program. I'm really excited to have you here. We've got a couple of announcements to make, and then we're going to get into our guests. We've got retired Army Major Major Ed Pulido coming up here to talk about the Real Warriors campaign. And then our second interview today is with a fascinating woman. Her name is Karen Vaughn. She's a Gold Star mother of a U.S. Navy SEAL member, six team member, Aaron Vaughn. And she's just come out with a new book about her experiences of becoming a Gold Star mother, which is really an unfortunate story that you have to go through. But she's also taken this not just to I think what she wants to do is she wants to really talk about what Aaron was like and what his life means to her and what it should mean to all of us. And so you got to stay tuned for that. Our two announcements are really ones that we've talked about before. Of course, the biggest event coming up in our local area here in the Ann Arbor area is the Thunder Over Michigan. And Thunder Over Michigan is coming up on Labor Day weekend here. And I just got an email just a little bit ago that tonight is the last chance to get some tickets at a lower cost because it says the admission costs are going to increase tonight. So you need to go to YankeeAirMuseum.org to find out about these costs of tickets. It looks like they're going up about $5 each. And there's all kinds of different things that are going on there. And I wanted to mention some of the events that are going to be occurring at this thing. It's just awesome. You know, we're going to be talking about the Navy SEALs a little bit later on. Well, right now, coming up here at Thunder Over Michigan, we've got the Navy Blue Angels are going to be here. And that's September 2nd through the 4th, Labor Day weekend. And we've seen these people before. And if you've ever seen formation flying, these men and women, I don't know how you can get that close without killing yourselves. But it's pretty exciting. So they're going to be there, as I mentioned. The Navy Blue Angels will be there. The United States Navy C-130 with an airplane that they call Fat Albert. Huge airplane that you're going to get to see. There's going to be aircraft rides available to you on the B-17 Yankee Lady, the B-25 Yankee Warrior, our C-47, or a Waco biplane. So there's lots of different things, and I'm not sure if the Army Helicopter Foundation is going to be up here again or not, but you may be able to get a ride on a helicopter as well. There's going to be reenactments, World War II battles. There's going to be static displays of all kinds of different aircraft. And all kinds of displays of just amazing flying ability with a lot of different unusual planes. And I think it's going to be fascinating. They are also going to have the largest parachute drop in the country, it says, this year at Thunder Over Michigan. So you got to get there and check that out. That's over Labor Day. Go to YankeeAirMuseum.org. Find out more about those tickets. The other event that's coming up, or it's not an event, it's an ongoing fundraiser for our Fisher House here in Ann Arbor. As most of you know, a Fisher House is designed to house the families of veterans that are undergoing treatment at the Ann Arbor VA. These are the families that live far out of the area and have no place to stay. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to build a Fisher House here in Ann Arbor, which is sort of like a Ronald McDonald House for veterans' families, and we are raising money on a regular basis. And so we want you to go to FisherHouseMichigan.org and please make a donation. June is a really big fundraising month, and we're trying to raise $300,000 this month, and we're getting close, but we need your help to get even closer. So go to FisherHouseMichigan.org. Thanks for doing that. All right, and I see that joining me on the line right now is my first guest, and this is Major Ed Pulido, and he is here to talk about the Real Warriors campaign. And, Major, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, what a great day to be an American, and great to hear all the hard work and dedication and inspiration that you and your fellow patriots have going on in Michigan. So glad that I could be on the program and talk about something that's real important to our nation's heroes and their families.
Well, it is. And since June is PTSD Awareness Month, this is what I was contacted about by Megan. And so tell us a little bit about your experience. You've got you had a true experience during your time in the service.
Well, I did. On August 17th of 2004, I hit an improvised explosive device, a roadside bomb that I say changed my life forever, and certainly not only my life, but my family's life, and all my friends, and, of course, my extended family. And I will tell you that the greatest thing I got was the fact that I came back home and received the support that I needed. Not only was my left leg amputated, but I also lived with the challenging silent wounds of war. And I will tell you that because of the Real Warriors campaign, I've become a huge, huge advocate about the importance of making sure that our mental health is something that we look at and that people like you help promote and help raise awareness about such an important issue. And people can go to realwarriors.net and learn a lot more about what we're trying to do to make a difference.
Well, it seems like so many different things that the RealWarriors.net organization is trying to do, and we know that upwards of 20 veterans a day are committing suicide, and that's totally unacceptable for anyone, military or non-military. And so we've got to be able to encourage them to take advantage of the resources that are out there and, you know, what the Real Warriors campaign is. Can you tell a little bit about some of the services that they offer?
Well, the Real Warriors campaign, it raises awareness, of course, on the signs and symptoms of the visible wounds of war, and also just symptoms that any individual may have just because of everyday issues. And I think one of the things that is so important about this campaign is we've got, of course, the Department of Defense, we've got the VA, we've got many other organizations across the country understanding that this is an issue that needs to be looked at. And it's about, you know, as we talk about messaging, we talk about the experiencing psychological stress as a, you know, common indicator of our military, that these wounds are, you know, they could be serious. And certainly if we don't get help or get these individuals the right support, that, you know, we could lose someone. And certainly, you know, seeking care early is a very positive thing, and making sure that family members understand the symptoms. And you know what? It's like living with anything, you know. We all get down. We all may feel low, but at the end of the day, we have to understand that these symptoms could really fester and could create problems. And at the Real Warriors campaign, what we're trying to do is just say, hey, you know what? We're here to help. We're here to support. And more importantly, we're here to give a helping hand to our warriors and their families.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Major, and I think it's so important that we continually remind people that, you know, we need to support these veterans, and it's just not, you know, this generation of veterans, your generation of veterans that are answering the call over and over and over again, and I can't imagine how you do that. And so I know here at Veterans Radio, and I know that all the veterans across the country, and there are 23 million of us, and so we've got to get behind, you know, what you are doing with Real Warriors and what many of these other different organizations are out there. There are so many different services and resources available to veterans of all conflicts from World War II on that we have to just, I think we just have to keep it in front of them and let them know that we're there for them. Just like.
Yeah, and I call it the safety net, not to interrupt you, but it's the safety net of services. If you just put it out there and very eloquently about why we need to do what we're doing.
Well, it's, you know, there's an organization that I've talked to on our program called We've Got Your Back, and that's, you know, I love that concept because, as you know, and all of the veterans that are out there, one of the things that we learned when we were going through all of our different types of training is that we had the back of everybody that was on our team, and even though we're out of the service now, we still have the back of all the members on our team. And some of them are going through some real problems, and some of them can be real problem solvers. And so the idea of all of these men and women getting together and helping each other, it's really heartwarming to me, and I'm sure it's heartwarming to a lot of people out there, and we've got to make sure we continue doing that.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I think the Real Warriors campaign is about action. And I just want to tell you a little bit of couple of things that I think are very important for your listenership to understand. And more importantly, I want to say something to you. You know, first of all, thank you for your service and sacrifice and welcome home. And I remember when I was at Brooke Army Medical, the Vietnam Veterans of America would come in my room and say, you know what, young man, the mistakes that were made on us will not be made on you. And that's why you and I are talking and promoting this great effort. But at the Real Warriors Campaign, we have an outreach center that's, you know, 24/7. People can call our hotline, which is 866-966-1020. They can go to realwarriors.net and find out mm-hmm. more information about what is going on. We've got video profiles, PSAs. I've actually got a video profile that highlights my story of what I call challenge, triumph, and change. And then, of course, we can use social media and then outlets like you. People can go to Real Warriors and learn more about on social media, but also, you know, through the media outlets like yours and your show that we can promote and say, hey, you know what? On behalf of a grateful nation, we're not going to leave you behind on the field of battle. And as your next guest is coming up, understands, and I understand the ultimate sacrifice that's made, you know what? At the end of the day, we have to have the resources and the information and, more importantly, the opportunities to say thank you on behalf of a grateful nation, but more importantly, thank you and say, you know what? We have these resources available for support.
Well, absolutely, and we're talking with Major Ed Pulido. I want to make sure I'm not mispronouncing that. Am I?
You're outstanding. You
All right.
Great.
Great. Sometimes I have some problems with this. And you're going to be available for other outlets to talk to this coming Wednesday, and I greatly appreciate your coming onto our program today to talk about the realwarriors.net and the Real Warriors campaign. I know that Father's Day is a very special day for all of us dads out there, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk to us today.
Well, this is an important issue, and as I always say, you know what, we have to pay it forward for all of those that have served, and during this month of PTSD awareness, I just want to say thank you to you for understanding and for letting your listeners know that, you know what, freedom is not free, sacrifice is not free, and we must do our part as Americans to make a difference. Go to realwarriors.net. Hoorah.
Hoorah. There you go. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your blessed day. Thank you very much, Major.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I've never been called sir that much by somebody who outranks me. I like that. kind of unusual. But we want to make sure that everybody is aware of this, and I want you to, again, to remind everyone to go look, check out the Real Warriors campaign. It's something that we all need to be aware of, and I think it's very, very important that we do not forget what we have promised to our veterans here. And I'm just looking for my little quote here that I use every once in a while when I'm talking to people about how we can actually help people out. And that's, you know, George Washington said it best, and that's, just, you know, how many hundreds of years ago, right? Over 200 years ago. And so he says that the willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars were treated and appreciated by our nation. So remember that. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back shortly with Karen Vaughn, and I can't wait for this interview. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be right back. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and of course that was the Navy theme, and we're going to be talking about some Navy SEALs today. And you know, we've had the privilege on this program of talking with a number of Navy SEALs, and I can't think of a more honorable group of men and women that I've been able to talk to. And these people have really put their lives on the line, and unfortunately, many of them, gets me more emotional than I thought it would. You know, when people die And we don't understand why. It's how difficult it must be for our survivors to work their whole way through that. And so joining me on the line right now is Karen Vaughn. She's a Gold Star mother of U.S. Navy SEAL Team Member 6 member, Aaron Vaughn, and author of a new book entitled World Changer, A Mother's Story. And I strongly encourage you to go out and buy this book. It was very emotional to read, and I think it's very emotional to Karen and her family, of course. And I'm just going to bring you on. Karen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. What an honor to be with you tonight.
Well, it is our honor, and for you to give up part of your Father's Day to be on our program is greatly appreciated. And when I started reading this book, and we were trying to get copies of it and so on and so forth, so I ended up reading it on Kindle, and I read it in one night because it just grabbed hold of me. And I want you to introduce our audience to your son, Aaron, please.
Well, first, I really appreciate that. You can't imagine how much that means to me. You know, Aaron, I'll tell you about Aaron. Aaron was just an extraordinary human being from birth to death. He lived 90 years and 30, we like to say. He died just after his 30th birthday in Afghanistan in a helicopter shootdown as a team of SEALs were rushing in to assist Rangers as a quick reaction force in a 3.5-hour firefight that was going on. You know, Aaron was a kid who always knew exactly what he was created to be. By the time he was 8 years old, he would tell anyone who would listen to him that one day he was going to be a Navy SEAL. I didn't even know what a Navy SEAL was when he started telling me that's what he was going to be. So I, of course, had to research it as I realized through the years that he was not going to let go of this dream, and it wasn't just a childish thought. This was something he determined in his heart he was going to become. And I really like to tell people that the two most important things you'll ever know about Aaron is that he had a deep faith in God. He had an incredible relationship with God, and because of that, you know, we know exactly where he went when that helicopter crashed on that horrible night when it was shot down, and we know that we'll be with him again. And then the other thing that's important is to know that he just had a character that was uncharacteristic of most young children. He loved this country. He honored those who went before him. You know that quote you read? Mm-hmm. Just before I came on, wow, that just really punched me in the gut, because that was him. Because we had, as a family and as a community, modeled for him what had been given, you know, for him, and how honorable a veteran was, and how honorable any man or woman who offered their lives for the protection and defense of others was. And so, yeah, it was a natural thing for him to want to serve his country that way because of his deep, deep love for this nation.
Well, I don't want to give the whole book away, because I do want people to actually read it, because I think it'll be very important. But I love the stories about your growing up, and Aaron's growing up in Tennessee. And as my audience know, my dad's from Tennessee. So every time I hear, you know, stories of Tennessee, I reflect back on all of the adventures I had in a little town called Normandy, which is down near Tullahoma and Shelbyville, and all the things that Aaron did. You know, you go out and catching frogs and scaring your cousins and and camping and adventures. Being from New Jersey, we didn't do a whole lot of the same things that we did in Tennessee. But just the childhood that he had, that was just so reminiscent of things that I was able to observe. You know, life is different in Tennessee than it is in other parts of the world, I think, sometimes. And listening to you talk about Aaron's childhood and the adventures that he had, and also the tribulations that he had, and, you know, being a star athlete and not being able to be an athlete anymore. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about his growing up, not, you know, in school, and the other things that he did in addition to wanting to be a SEAL?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Aaron was a mischievous kid, but not in a bad way. You know, not the bad, not troublemaker, not that sort of thing.
He was clever.
He was clever. He was. That's a very good way to put it. And he was really super smart. And so he was just, but more than anything, he was funny. I mean, that's what I like to tell people, is he was just a total cut up, you know, and he and I would always try to outdo each other on pranking each other. And he got the best of me most of the time. I know you write about a couple of those in the book, but he was just funny that way, you know. And I remember, like just to give your audience a taste of what his personality was like, I remember one time after he was a Navy SEAL, he came home from a deployment, and he was spending a couple weeks at our house. And we used to sit up late and talk all the time at night when everyone else went to bed. We would sit up and talk. I treasured it so much. But one night we were in this really serious conversation, and I said, "Son, I'm just so confused about something, because it's clear to me that you were supposed to be a Navy SEAL, but all through your childhood, I always believed God was telling me that you were going to grow up and be a great missionary." And just without even a blink, he just said, "Well, Mom, maybe you misunderstood him, and he was telling you I was going to be a great mercenary." And it was just, he had that sort of wit and humor all the time, and he just made you laugh all the time. But about his, you know, he was a kid who was skinny as a rail. We were always trying to help him gain weight, which if somebody told me one day in my life, "I need you to gain weight today,"
right,
I would be the happiest woman on earth, you know. but we were always trying to help him gain weight because he was way too thin, you know, for his height. He ended up being a 6'4" tall man and was, wow, nearly that tall by the time he was around 12. And so, you know, size 13 shoe, and he weighed 120 pounds. But by the time he was a sophomore in high school, he started filling out his frame. He got up to a whopping, you know, 160, and he became a really formidable football player because he was extraordinarily tenacious, just really super tenacious. And his coach, one of the greatest compliments he said he ever got on the field was when he won Defensive Player of the Week his sophomore year in our whole county, when his coach said he plays much bigger than his size. And that's when Aaron, he was always that person who put out 200%, you know, or 1,000%, so much more than most of the people around him put out. But he ended up being a really good football player. And just before the first game of his senior year, he blew out the anterior cruciate ligament in his left knee during the Thursday's practice.
Wow.
And had that, you know, had to go through the whole reconstructive surgery and everything, but he did great. I mean, it was a setback. It eliminated his senior year of football and his possibilities of playing college football before he went into the SEAL Challenge program. But that was all okay, because all he knew was he was going to get that knee well enough to still be a Navy SEAL, because that was the ultimate goal. And then he did. He just recovered so phenomenally that colleges actually started sending letters again.
Mm-hmm.
And then just before school let out his senior year, he was playing a pickup game of basketball with some friends, and he blew his knee out again. And this time when the surgeons went in to repair it, they came out and told his father and I that there was nothing they could do to repair it, that his knee was destroyed, there was too much damage. And he'd spend the rest of his life somewhat handicapped, and literally said those words, he will never be able to do anything physical again without the use of a special brace. And when Aaron woke up from that anesthetic fog, he literally felt like his life was over. And I don't know how far you want me to go in the story, but he just felt like life was over. Everything he dreamed of, everything he knew he was to become, was gone. And it was a devastating reality for him.
No, I think it's important that people know that the challenges that he went through to get to be this Navy SEAL, and the idea of blowing out your ACL and then blowing out your knee, and then going through probably what has to be the most rigorous training program in the history of mankind, and doing it. And I got to point out here, we've got about a little over 2 minutes to go until we take a break. So I want to remind everybody that we're talking with Karen Nguyen, who's the writer of a book entitled World Changer, a mother's story about her son, Aaron Vaughn, who is a member of the Navy SEAL Team 6 and unfortunately was killed in Afghanistan in 2011. We'll get to that later on. But right now I want to talk about this kid and just the tenacity of overcoming such a serious injury. And I don't know how he did that one.
You know, he always believed, he came home on 9/11. He had given up his dream because it was, you know, the world told him that it was an impossibility. He had no anterior cruciate ligament in his left knee, and his knee was destroyed, and the world, mm-hmm, told him it was over. And on 9/11, I guess God told him it wasn't over, because he came home a few months later on his birthday, and he said, "Mom and Dad, I stopped at the Navy recruiter's office on the way home from work, and I joined the SEAL Challenge program." And the first thing out of his father's mouth was, "Well, son, you'll never make it." You know, he wasn't, mm-hmm, being derogatory. It was just ludicrous. You know, he had no knee. He had no left knee, which just as a side note, since this is veterans listening, you know, it was a really tender and beautiful thing when we saw his autopsy, because that injury was noted in his autopsy. Oh. And the only thing that wasn't intact in his whole body, you know, he was burned beyond recognition, but the only thing that wasn't intact was his lower left leg.
Oh,
because that joint wasn't there, and it was just one, mm-hmm, more stamp of evidence of just what what God had done, allowing that boy to live his dream. It was a beautiful thing. But, you know, the story tells itself. He went on to become a Navy SEAL, graduated his BUDS class, 157 men started and only 7 finished, and he was one of them. And he never could even tape the knee because it would have given away his secret. So it was just a God thing, and he always knew it, always knew it.
I
never stopped thanking God for the gift of letting him live that life.
No, the power of God in his life and in your life, obviously, could you pass that along to him, is so important to you and your family, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Aaron never once beat his chest and said, look what I did. You know, even when he made it all the way to the pinnacle of SEAL Team 6, he instead just always had this attitude of, like, hands thrown to the sky saying, God, I can't believe you let me do this. Faith was crucial to him, and it is to us, too, of course. And you know, yeah, absolutely. We would have no peace. I don't know how people get through burying a child if they don't have a relationship with Christ. I don't understand. I mean, just being completely honest, because it's the nobody can help you through something like that. Only a higher power can give you comfort when you're having to bury your child. That's it.
Well, we need to take a break, Karen. So we're going to be back in just a minute. We're going to listen to some news and see what's happening in the rest of the world. We are listening to Karen Vaughn right now on Veterans Radio. She's the author of a book entitled World Changer. If you have a question for Karen, please give us a call. The number here is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. The music is coming up, so we will be back in about 2 or 3 minutes. Thank you very much. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with Karen Vaughn. She's the author of a new book called World Changer, A Mother's Story. And the mother's story in this case is the Gold Star mother of Aaron Carson Vaughn of SEAL Team 6, who was killed on August 6, 2011, in a Chinook helicopter in Afghanistan. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But, Karen, I want to just let you know that as I was reading the book, and as I said, I'm doing all my time tripping back and forth, because it sounds like you were from Tennessee, and then you moved to Stuart, Florida, and my grandfather lived in Salerno, Florida, which is, I know, just down the block from there. So everything is, there's something cosmic going on here, but I'm not sure what.
That's crazy. Wow.
That is crazy, right?
Yeah, Port Salerno was basically part of Stuart.
I know. When he first moved down there, you know, it was nobody but him. But, but anyway, so as this training that Aaron went through, as I mentioned, we've talked to a number of Navy SEALs, and I was just wondering, as a mom, what did he share with you about his training, and what, you know, what was your reaction to it?
Well, of course, getting through BUDS, you know, he wasn't able to be in much communication, but he did get to come home for his sister's wedding just after Hell Week finished in phase one of BUDS. And, you know, I just remember just such satisfaction. You know, he didn't care about the intense work. That was exciting, because it meant he was, you know, getting closer to his dream. So the harder it was, the more. I remember he told me he was so glad that he had a winter hell week, which just cracked me up. Like, the knee wasn't going to be enough of an issue. You know, he also had to, you know, have perilous water temperatures and stuff like that, you know, when they're constantly in the surf and the sand. And you know, but when he came home after hell week, he just looked like a person who had moved heaven and earth, and knew that nothing would ever set him back again. There would be nothing that he would need to fear again. And it gave him so much confidence and just such a different stride. And the way he carried himself, not proud at all. I don't mean like that. Great humility, but just confidence in his ability to overcome. It was something he'd always dreamed of doing. And it was miraculous to watch him, you know, form from this boy that was just a jokester and, you know, constantly pulling pranks on people and stuff, to turn into this serious warfighter. And, you know, as he made it into the teams and started being deployed, you know, he changed. This is a hard conflict. You know, this is the longest war in America's history,
right?
And it's been fought by the smallest number of warfighters in the history of any war, you know? So we have less than 0.5% of our nation serving on the front lines at any given time during this war. And there, it's an all-volunteer military, and it took its toll on him. It's taken its toll on his friends, you know, but I can say this, it didn't take his toll to a level of where he would have ever done a thing different because, mm-hmm. as I said, he loved his job. He thanked God that he got to live that dream. And here's why, because he believed that America was the greatest nation ever devised by man.
It certainly
he knew.
Is. It still
he
is.
Knew. It needed protection. He knew that, and he was that person just like you, and just like the major that you had on before. You're the people who say, if not me, who, and if not now, when? And 9/11 was that sort of call to the, you know, to the young men and women across that generation, and they certainly responded, didn't they?
They did.
Filled my heart with pride.
I can understand that. I had the privilege of meeting, I have a nephew who is an Army Ranger who had the privilege, he says, he had the privilege of training with the Navy SEALs out in San Diego. And I was fortunate enough to be out there with John, and a bunch of Navy SEALs came over to his house for a gathering. And I've never been so impressed with these young, you know, we don't have to worry about the young men of America when you meet these people.
Right.
You know, these special forces guys, men and women, and these SEAL team members. And each one of them, as I shook hand with them, made my hand, you know, broke more bones in my hand. And, you know, but the thing that impressed me, most of them were just thanking me for my service. And,
right.
And it, you know, and I didn't do anything. I think, you know, I'm looking at these young men and I'm going, wow. You know, you guys are just amazing specimens of Americanhood. And that's the way that I looked at it. And just like you just said, you know, America is the greatest country in the world, and it is still the greatest country in the world. And no matter what your politics are, people will rally to make sure that that happens and continues on. And I think that's something that's important. So I don't want to dwell on what happened in Afghanistan. I know that the helicopter, as I mentioned, and reading and doing a little bit more research for this, the Chinook was sent out on a mission, as you mentioned, to go in and reinforce some special forces, some Rangers that were on the ground, and it got shot down with 30 people on it. And,
right.
And all of them died.
Right. 30 U.S. forces and 8 Afghan forces. Yeah, all 38 perished and a military working dog, a U.S. military working dog.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a helicopter pilot myself, I can only imagine what occurred in those last seconds, because I have seen it happen. And so you find out, how did you find out? I mean, I know I read it, but everything was so confusing and scary and frightening, and you know, you were getting bits of information but not all of it. How did you finally find out about this?
Yeah, at 7:30 that morning my phone rang, and it was my husband, who was actually working 3,500 miles away from home that day, and he was in Vancouver, British Columbia, and of course I was in Southeast Florida. And he called and said, Karen, I have something to tell you, and I don't want to. And his voice was breathy and shaking, and I could not imagine what was about to come out of his mouth. And he finally mustered the strength to say that a helicopter had been shot down in Afghanistan last night, and that the more information that comes out about the shoot down, the more he felt like Aaron's team could be involved. Mm-hmm. And so my mind just kind of went into a total state of confusion. It was the first time we'd ever had a conversation like that in the 9 years that Aaron had served. We never felt this. And maybe it was intuition, I don't know, but we both knew something was terribly wrong. So he asked me to start trying to get a hold of Aaron through Skype or, you know, any other means, and see if I could reach any of his friends. I tried all that, couldn't reach him. I called my husband back, and we decided together that we would call Aaron's wife's parents' home. She was staying with them through that deployment because she had just had a child, their second child. Mm-hmm. And they had a little boy who was almost 2 and a daughter who was only 9 weeks old on that morning. And I called her parents' house and talked to them a couple times through the morning, and then just 1 hour. I mean, it was 1 hour of just total chaos trying to get word, and I'm thankful to God it was only 1 hour, of course. Mm-hmm. But at about 8:30, I called Kimberly's parents' home again to just give them more information or try to share information, and And her father answered the phone and said, "Karen, it's bad." And I said, "Oh, I know," you know, thinking that he was talking about the likelihood that Aaron's team was involved. And he said, "No, listen to me." And then he spoke those words. It changed everything forever, forever. Mm-hmm. He said, "Karen, Aaron was on the helicopter, mm-hmm. and there were no survivors." And, you know, the world just stopped spinning. I mean, that's just really, I don't know another word. I try to explain it to people what it feels like in a moment like that. And the best I can explain it is it just feels like the oxygen gets sucked out of not just your lungs, not just the room, but the world. You know, everything mm-hmm. just goes black. You start trying to process what it is you've just heard because it doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, my oldest daughter had come over and she was with me. And by the time I got word and I was running around the house just frantic, you know, you don't know what you're doing and you just kind of go into this state of panic with your mind trying to absorb it, like I said, and I landed on the bed and I remember a few minutes went by and Tara grabbed me by the hands and she said, "Mom, do you want me to call Dad?" Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I'd realized that, you know, we knew this horrible thing.
This is real.
And Billy didn't know it mm-hmm. and he didn't know. Now we were going to have to, you know, tell him too. So, you know, I remember when she called and she just said three words. She said, "Daddy, he's dead." And, you know, she hadn't called her father Daddy in decades. She was a grown woman with a family of her own. And it was just a child, you know, calling out to her father. And I remember Billy just said, "Honey, oh, okay, baby, I'll call mm-hmm. you back." Because, you know, now he was living in the same, you know, in the same chaos we were. So it's a horrible morning. I mean, there's never a good way for, you know, to find out. And of course the Navy came to our door too. Aaron had requested mm-hmm. that. They came to our door a little bit later. And, you know, by that time friends were over and our house was full of people. And it was just a surreal day that I'll never be able to look back on with anything except just terror, you know, remembering the moments.
I can't imagine going through that. I mean, I can, because I can remember knowing some people that passed away and it just took my knees out from under me.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, how could this possibly be happening? And it's not happening
right.
to you. It's not that it's you that it's happening to. It's whoever it was that just, you know, that they're gone. And,
yeah.
You know, and then
as if they never were. Just,
right.
Just like
and
that.
So now,
it's the most bizarre. Yeah.
Yes. But now let's transition to over the last 5 years, 6 years now, that you have become a speaker on the national scene for not only for our, you know, our military, but for so many other things as a Gold Star mother. And I think as I was reading this, you've also started up a nonprofit, or I think it was your daughter that started a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I want to talk about how you and your husband, I mean, Billy's just as important to this whole story as well, because you two have been a team for looks like almost
right.
40 years. And what did you do next? What happened?
It was really bizarre because, you know, it wasn't a life we ever anticipated. We couldn't have planned this in a million years, and it wasn't anything we sought after. But what happened is after the investigation was done, they called all the families into Virginia Beach for a debriefing right on the investigation. And some things in that debriefing didn't sit right with several family members. And a lot of us left with kind of penetrating questions. And as we, you know, to try to make a long story very brief, we left there with a lot of questions. And as we started asking senior military leaders that we had contact with, because of his elite status, we had contact with people who most people don't get to talk to, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, I understand that.
Right. And we started talking to some of these leaders, and every time we'd hear the story, it was different. And mm-hmm. every time we'd ask a question, I mean, so questions raise more questions. The answers to these questions raise more questions. And Billy and I just started, you know, kind of trying to research what went wrong and how this happened that, you know, that 22 members of SEAL Team 6 were killed by a goat farmer, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And how did we get to this place? And I came across this website one day called iCasualties.org, and I started doing the numbers. And I found out about the increases in death and wounded in action that were astronomical when the rules of engagement shifted in Afghanistan in March of 2009 when we moved to the COIN strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started talking to members of Congress and members of the military and everybody we could about rules of engagement. And that's what kind of put us on the national scene. Like I said, not a path we we would have ever even considered or chose. It kind of chose us, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what started that. And then I started speaking on a Defend Freedom tour across America, just trying to inspire people to be engaged in their civic obligation to, you know, to vote, to be involved in the process of our government, to raise kids who were involved in this process. And that's been kind of our life. Billy started working with Veterans Affairs, and I did too, trying to, you know, get VA reform so that veterans, when they came home, had the kind of care we had promised them when they left and went to war, you know, and that sort of thing. It just kind of found us. That's all. And we say all the time that what we chose to do was honor Aaron's legacy by fighting culturally the same battle he fought kinetically. That's mm-hmm. what we've chosen to do.
Well, wow. You know, all these things get all these fluids boiling in you as you find out about these things about, you know, military exercises that don't follow procedure or something else, you know, gets involved with it, or you run a mission differently than it would normally be run. And as you mentioned, the rules of engagement, and I can't think of a veteran who has been in any conflict over the last 50 years who is just so outraged about, you know, not being able to take out the enemy when you have an opportunity to take them out because of whatever political expediency is involved and so forth. And that, when I was reading that section or doing some more research on this yesterday, I was getting more and more angry. I'm going, God, they're still doing this stuff over and over again. It doesn't make any difference, you know. Anyway, we'll get off of that.
We had another green on blue attack this weekend. Killed three more U.S. forces. This is absolutely unnecessary. You don't want to get me off on that.
I don't. I want to keep our license here. I know how exciting that can be, and because of what you see with that happening. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about your, you know, you're involved with the Concerned Veterans of America, mm-hmm. and you're involved with a lot of different things out there right now. And I think the idea of what you're trying to do is so right that I want to make sure that people understand this. I don't think it comes from a political standpoint. It comes from the right standpoint.
Not at all. There is nothing political about fighting for better rules of engagement. This is an American issue. This isn't a right or left issue. And, you know, I would love to touch. I forgot to say anything about Operation 300. It is, mm-hmm. it is the pride and joy of what our family chose to do in the wake of Aaron's death. And that was, like I said, he left behind two little children, Reagan, mm-hmm. who was almost two, and Chamberlain, who as I said, was 9 weeks old. And their mother kept saying something that just stuck in our hearts. She kept saying over and over again, who's going to teach my children to do the things their father would have done? Because he was a rough and rugged guy, you know, a guy who would have taught them to shoot guns and to, mm-hmm. you know, and to fish and to deep sea fish. And so that's what created the idea of Operation 300. And what that is it's an organization where we pair up kids of fallen heroes with father-age male mentors, and we turn them loose for a weekend of extreme adventure. And, I mean, it's just laughter. It is just sunrise to sunset fun and just extravagant fun. And these kids are flying planes down here in South Florida. They're going mm-hmm. deep sea fishing. The sheriff's departments are coming out and teaching them to shoot guns and, you know, under really controlled environments, of course. But it's so funny because they shoot 22s that are shaped like their daddy's ARs, and it's just so funny because they've got, you know, so it's like that, but this has been the most rewarding, most satisfying journey since Aaron's death, is watching these lives transform coming to this camp and getting to be in a camp environment where people really get them and really know what it is they need as a family because we've been there. So mm-hmm. Operation 300 is just, I know Aaron's got a smile down from heaven constantly thinking about what his sister and his dad did starting this organization.
I think it sounds like a great idea with the idea of having, you know, these surrogate dads, because, you know, when you're losing, even in civilian life, I mean, you know, if you lose your dad at, you know, 3 years old or 9 weeks old or whatever it is, and you don't have that, you know, that person around you that to teach you these things, I think it's such a great idea. And, you know, and also they're going to find out more about their dad as they go along, because the people that are coming in as mentors are very similar, I would think,
right,
to what their dads were like. And then, you know, we you know, we've seen examples, and I've talked to people that don't have any memory of their dad because they died when they were so young. And this is what you're trying to do, is provide these memories for these kids.
Yeah, we even had one. I mean, some really interesting things have happened. We had one Special Forces guy come in, and we paired him up with the child of a Special Forces man who was very young when the young man died in combat. And we paired them up not having any clue that there was any connection, and found out on the last day of the camp that this young boy's father was this man's best friend. He had no idea who he was. And so then this man who was his kid's mentor flew him out to San Diego and introduced him to all of his dad's friends, and just completely changed his child's life. You know, it's just such a beautiful thing. But things like that happen all the time at the camp. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
So we're going to encourage people to go check that out. So go to operation300.com and see what you can do to help out there. And the thing that we're talking with Karen Vaughn, and she's the author of a new book called World Changer, A Mother's Story. And it certainly seems like you are changing the world for the better. And by letting people know that even though, you know, your son died, which is horrible, you have taken his memory and have just gone on and have, you know, moved that out around the world to let people know, you know, what he was like. And you have to be very, as you said, you have to be very proud of what you've been able to accomplish in his memory.
I am proud of it. I'm proud of it. I'll say it's been very good for me to have something to do with his memory, to get to share his legacy, and especially now culminating all of that into this book about his life, his incredible, amazing life. It's inspiring people, you know, to read his story. And I'm so glad that I got to share it, because his story deserved to be shared. You know, he lived a remarkable life of overcoming and of understanding what was important, you know, of having priorities straight. You know, so many of us can, even at my age, we can learn from somebody's life like that. You know, when a person grows up to be a legacy liver, they change everything around them. I say very often that Aaron, when he was alive, if you knew him, he changed you because you knew him. You were a better person for having known him. And I still feel like, you know, through this book, what I'm doing now through telling his story in this book is I'm allowing him to touch the hearts of millions of people across the nations and help them, you know, just reach for more, search for more, want more from themselves, desire more from themselves. Because I'm trying to live a life now where I honor the kind of sacrifice he made, you know, I want other people to live lives where they understand so much has been given for us to live in freedom, for us to explore anything we choose to explore. So much was given to give us that right. And I just want people to walk in that freedom and to really understand what they were created for and to grab a hold of it and seize it, if that makes sense. So that's a lot of what the book's about. And I did dedicate 18 chapters in the back to a study guide for parents who just want to take some proactive step in raising world-changing kids. And my oldest daughter and I sat down together and we wrote these 18 chapters. And you know, it was a reflective time for me, because with her, you know, I wanted to sit down and ask her what I did right, what we did wrong, Billy and I. And we got a very good 18 chapters in the back that will give parents at least one path to raising legacy-leaving, world-changing children.
I think you did it. I'm sure you got a passing grade for being a mom and a dad. And I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. As we come up to the top of the hour, we've been talking with Karen Vaughn. Her book is World Changer, A Mother's Story. What's next for you in 1 minute?
Wow. Just, you know, I'm on book tour right now, just pushing this thing out. If anybody wants to keep up with what I'm doing, they can go to officialkarenvaughn.com. The book is there. Some t-shirts we're selling and stuff like that, if anybody wants some silly gear like that. But it's also available on Amazon. But I'm just staying on the speaking tour. I'm committed to inspiring Americans to enjoy their freedom, to love their country, and to appreciate the sacrifice that's been made on their behalf.
Well, thank you very, very much, Karen, and thank you for sharing your story of your amazing son. And if you're in Michigan, let us know. I'd love to meet you in person.
I'd love that, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. That's another Veterans Radio. It is in the can, as they say. Next, we just got done talking about a Navy SEAL. Next week, we're going to be talking about Army Special Forces with Barry Sadler. Remember the guy, the Ballad of the Green Berets. So we're going to go out on that music today. I want to thank you all for listening to Veterans Radio. I've got to stretch it a little bit while we load it up, I guess. And so we are going to be talking with Mark Leibson. And Mark Leibson is a writer. Many Vietnam veterans know him. He's one of the contributors to the Vietnam Veterans Magazine, and he's written a book all about Barry Sadler. And it's, you would think a very talented man, a very dedicated man, much like Aaron Vaughn we just heard about. And, you know, life doesn't always go the way that you want it to go. So here we go right now. Until next week, you are dismissed.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret, silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best.